You're listening to At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends, themes, and emerging developments in the bond markets today. Hello, this is Alex Rover, head of U.S. interest rate strategy at JP Morgan. Today, I'm joined by Jay Berry, head of U.S. government bond strategy. And we're going to share our thoughts on interest rate markets following the September FOMC meeting and revisit our recent discussion on the possible paths forward for fiscal policy in the coming weeks. To start with the Fed, yesterday's meeting proved a bit of a hawkish surprise from a policy standpoint, although bond markets are still mulling over the implications, particularly in light of the looming debt limit, the ongoing fiscal discussions in Washington, and the higher macro uncertainty emanating from China's markets. For the rates markets, there were three main takeaways from yesterday's FOMC meeting. First, the Fed signaled that tapering will start soon, in November most likely, provided the economy plays out broadly as expected, and that it would be appropriate to conclude the tapering by mid-2022. Second, the interest rate forecast dots turned more hawkish, with the median dot for 22, 23, and 24 moving up 25 basis points, 100 basis points, and 175 basis points, respectively. And then finally, the Fed doubled its overnight RRP facility counterparty limit to $160 billion from $80 billion. Jay, how has the government bond market reacted to the Fed news, and is it done reacting?
Thanks so much, Alex. So the initial reaction in the Treasury market was for the Treasury curve to twist flatter yesterday in response to the outcome that you talked about, as the markets, I believe, interpreted this somewhat more hawkishly. Overall, yesterday, though, I'd say that volatility in the rates market was relatively muted as yields didn't move much more than 3 to 4 basis points in the short to intermediate sector of the curve. As you mentioned, while setting up a November taper wasn't a surprise to the markets, it's the duration of the taper that caught the markets offsides, as there was broad and it seemed like unanimous support from the committee for being done with asset purchases by the middle of 2022. For what it's worth, our own forecast had assumed the Fed would complete its asset purchases around this time next year. So that, combined with the dots projecting more than 6 hikes by year-end 24, as you talked about, and markets pricing in only 4 over that same period, this was construed as hawkish indeed. Despite the hawkish developments, though, short to intermediate yields, as we mentioned, only climbed 3 to 4 basis points, and long-end yields actually fell a basis point. And to us, it's the curve dynamics that are a lot more interesting here than the outright moves, as the broad curve flattened 4 basis points and to us was more consistent with the onset of a Fed tightening cycle than it was at the ending stages of an easing cycle. But it's pretty funny because just as much as the yield curve twisted flatter and long-end yields actually declined yesterday, today we've seen just the opposite, as bond yields have risen across the curve, most particularly at the long end, and TIPS break-evens have widened back. Some of this is technical in nature, I think, as 10-year yields have broken back above their 200-day moving average, but it also comes alongside a more hawkish outcome at today's Bank of England meeting, in which the MPC focused on the rapid tightening in labor markets, and that's actually caused our UK team to bring forward its liftoff date for Bank of England tightening by one quarter to the first quarter of 22. So kind of a tale of two reactions yesterday, Alex, but I think what we can say is the markets constructed this or construed this to be more hawkish than anticipated going in.
That's an interesting point on the curve. How can you explain the broad curve flattening that occurred in the wake of the Fed meeting yesterday? And what do you think it is? What do you think the path for the curve is going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we look at the curve, it's a little surprising to me that the very long end flattened yesterday for two reasons. First, the markets brought forward the expected Fed liftoff date. And second, long-term inflation expectations fell as the market perceived the Fed to be less credible around its flexible average inflation targeting framework. And that's meaningful because in both instances, higher expectation of Fed policy rates and lower break-evens both tend to flatten the yield curve at the long end. What's even more interesting on top of that is that long-end yields actually fell as the curve flattened, and that the front end, call it the 2s-3s curve or the 2s-5s curve, actually couldn't steepen either. And that's more interesting to us, because while the long end of the curve tends to anticipate shifts in Fed policy and flatten in advance of the first hike, the front end doesn't tend to flatten until the Fed actually begins tightening. So what we saw yesterday, particularly at the long end, was more suggestive of actually the Fed getting ready to tighten rather than being potentially 18 months away from it. So we think there's 4 factors that are probably driving this. And to an extent, we're relieved to see the curve reverse course and steepen today, But this has been a really small break in the flattening trend that's been in place for the last 3 or 4 weeks or so. And what are those factors? First, we think it's growth expectations. You know, as we know, we've lowered our growth expectations for the third quarter. Just a couple of months ago, we were expecting over 8% growth, and now we're down to 5%. And while we have made small revisions higher to our fourth quarter estimates, they're not offsetting this downdraft lower. And I think until the markets see growth expectations stabilize, it's going to be hard to expect that the yield curve could re-steepen. It's our view here at JP Morgan that the economy in the U.S. and globally is breaking the link between COVID-19 infections and mobility, and that this Delta wave should have a pretty limited impact on growth. But until we stop seeing these serial revisions lower, I think it's hard for the curve to kind of get up off the mat and steepen. And until the data begins to show that, and the markets feel more comfortable that the current wave of infections will not having a lasting impact on growth, it's going to be hard to steepen. Second, and we mentioned this before, I think a little bit of this revolves around the credibility of the FATE framework. You know, recently, as the market has proved to price in earlier start to the Fed normalization, to the tightening cycle, it's also moved to price in a lower terminal rate. So what's pretty interesting, the OIS forward market is now pricing Fed liftoff in approximately February of 2023, a full month earlier than where it was prior to the Fed meeting. But longer dated OIS forwards now imply that the funds rate will peak around 160 or so, which was a full 90 basis points below the Fed's longer run dot and 20 basis points below the local peak in sort of the curve earlier this month. I think one could argue that the markets are ignoring the median dot and focusing on the dovish sort of core of the committee who see a much more benign path towards Fed tightening. But I think the movement in TIPS break-evens yesterday sort of underscored just the opposite, and that break-evens had narrowed in the aftermath and are at the low end of the range that they've held since late winter. In essence, I think the combination of those factors yesterday reveals that markets believe the Fed's concerns about inflation will dampen the credibility of the FATE framework. Thus, while the Fed may be lifting off earlier and more aggressively early on, you know, the markets are saying that the next normalization cycle may be pretty shallow and the Fed won't have to get back to its perceived neutral rate, which we see in the longer run dot. And then the final piece of the puzzle is really related to demand. I think the 20-year bond auction this week, we saw what happened there with very robust end user demand. And it follows on a trend of very strong demand for longer duration treasuries over the course of the last couple of months. We found from the Treasury's investor class auction allotment data that the incremental demand has been coming from investment managers, consistent with the acceleration of bond fund flows into fixed income in 2021. On balance, I think it's these factors that have helped the curve really decouple from its fundamental drivers. And it's pretty interesting here that the long end of the curve, 10s-30s, it now looks about 10 basis points too flat after we control for how the market's pricing the Fed over the medium term and how it's pricing inflation over the medium term, as well as the pace of the Fed's asset purchases. So on balance here, you know, this all makes the case that the curve should steepen. But until the narrative on growth improves and until the market better understands that the Fed is committed to FATE and until the demand at the long end slows somewhat, it's going to be hard for the curve to structurally re-steepen. So maybe I can turn it around to you now, Alex. You know, I think in addition to all the things that we've talked about the Fed meeting so far, you at the early onset of this podcast talked about the change to the Fed's overnight reverse repo facility. What are the short-term markets making of the increase to the counterparty limit for the RRP?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the curve discussion is really interesting, and the front end of the curve discussion is you know remaining pretty anchored. You know, one of the things I think about the taper is like even with the earlier start and finishing, you know, this imbalance between sort of supply and demand in the money markets is going to persist. Indeed, you know, if we assume a November start to tapering and a mid-2022 end, it's just the Fed would probably still be adding something on the order of $400 to $500 billion of liquidity into the financial system. Yet, you know, at the same time, you know, if the debt ceiling is raised or suspended, the medium-term outlook for Treasury bill issuance is on net going to be negative. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of cash sort of looking for places to go. And you know, I guess you know, with this in mind, the cash glut in the liquidity markets isn't going away anytime soon, and so the downward pressure on money markets rates is likely to persist over the next 6 to 12 months, if not longer, and likely to keep you know sort of product spreads tight. Generally speaking, I think more QE and fewer bills means higher overnight RRP balances. You know, something we've already seen as, you know, RRP use has now surpassed over $1.2 trillion and is probably going higher from here in the near term. I think fortunately, most RRP counterparties, you know, remain below their counterparty limits. And in fact, I think as far as we can tell from the money fund data, the largest money fund counterparty went in for about $66 billion at the end of August, still pretty far away from the $80 billion number. Still, the Fed, you know, increased the counterparty limit to 160, and we think that suggests that there might be a couple of counterparties who are getting close to the prior limits. And so I think, you know, who those counterparties are, you know, maybe the GSEs. We know that they accumulate a lot of cash on a monthly basis, and you know, it's entirely possible that they're seeing, you know, ahead of sort of their mortgage payment cycle that they're testing those limits, of the existing limits anyway. Preemptively raising the limits by the Fed, I think, sort of erases doubt that the Fed's going to remain supportive of reserve balances. And you know, given those are going to continue to grow well into 2022, I think, you know, changing the limit just sort of takes a potential issue off of the table. Regardless of the increase to the counterparty limit, you know, we think this all should help relieve some downward pressure on the effective funds rate on SOFR and on T-bills as market participants try to divert more cash, or are able to divert more cash into the overnight RRP program. You know, suddenly a trillion and a half of RRP usage doesn't appear unreachable, and may be something we see, you know, sooner rather than later. So let me turn it back to you, Jay. I mean, you know, we've talked a little bit about the curve and sort of the market dynamics. You know, obviously there's a lot going on in DC right now. You know, what are your updated thoughts on the fiscal debate in DC, and what do you think it means for rates in the very near term?
Yeah, sure, Alex. I think there's a few things to highlight here. First, since we last spoke, we've got the data behind Treasury's receipts at the September corporate tax date. And I think they were high enough to indicate that the Treasury's probably got enough extraordinary measures and cash on hand to make it until probably the first week in November before it exhausts these resources and thereby risks a technical default if the debt ceiling is not raised or suspended, as you mentioned before. So we've got probably 5 or 6 weeks before we need to worry about that. But, you know, I think what we can say definitively is that there's been really no movement to get any legislation done. It's encouraging, you know, this week that the House introduced legislation to pair a debt ceiling suspension with a continuing resolution to fund the government into fiscal 22. But I think what seems likely is that this is unlikely to garner bipartisan support, and it's unlikely to sort of pass through the House and the Senate. So this leaves us sort of at loggerheads. And it would seem that, you know, you see that Treasury bills that are maturing anywhere between the latter half of October and the beginning of November are trading at a discount relative to surrounding tenors. And I think that's because investors at the front end of the curve are shying away from those securities. It's a very low probability that there will be a technical default, but I think investors don't want to be left holding those securities. And if this debate sort of remains protracted in nature, I think that what you're going to see is that discount at the short end of the curve is going to become somewhat more evident, although muted overall relative to other very rancorous debt ceiling debates, in large part because of this dynamic at the front end that you've talked about, where there's a surplus of cash and a deficit of assets at the short end of the curve, given the trillion-dollar drawdown in T-bills outstanding. And in the interim, I think what you can see is that there's been a steady drumbeat of public officials who have been sitting here trying to implore Congress to find a way to raise or suspend the debt ceiling. So over the weekend, Treasury Secretary Yellen wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal on this. And then earlier this week, just yesterday, the leadership of the TBAC, which are the group of private investors that help guide the Treasury Department with respect to its issuance and its regular and predictable patterns, discussed the real importance of raising the debt ceiling. And that, you know, protracted uncertainty over the debt limit could do lasting harm to the functioning of the Treasury market and potentially risk the U.S. sovereign rating. This all lines up with the research that we've published on the topic previously. But what I think we get the sense of is that one party needs to blink. Either we need to be able to find a way to get Republicans on board for this bipartisan support, or else the Democrats need to find a way to go it alone and get it done before the early part of November. So that's where we are. We're kind of at loggerheads, and it seems like the path forward is for, you know, a little bit more of a hiccup at the front end of the curve if markets get more concerned about lack of clarity and lack of resolution over the debt ceiling.
Thanks, Jay. So to sum up, the Fed delivered a hawkish surprise, and it's likely to be done tapering by mid-2022. This hawkish development is likely to be bearish for intermediate treasury yields. At the long end of the curve, things still look considerably too flat after adjusting for market pricing of Fed policy rates and expected inflation over time. But growth concerns and demand considerations suggest this may not reverse over the near term. At the front end, the RRP counterparty limit increases were preemptive in nature, knowing that the reserves will continue to grow into 2022 and the T-bill issuance will remain negative over the medium term. Finally, the debt ceiling does not look likely to be resolved over the short term, but the likelihood of a technical default remains very low at this point. That's all the time that we have for today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, J.P. Morgan's Global Research Podcast Series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read J.P. Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2021, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. All rights reserved. This episode was recorded on September 23rd, 2021.